Welcome to the Ohana Life Podcast. I created this podcast to provide important information that would empower you on this journey of life that we are all in together. I bring two people that I found extremely helpful to me or are an inspiration in some unique way. I try to combine my knowledge and questioning with the way they serve society in their distinct roles. It takes a team, a holistic family of support to feel whole in our lives. I wanted to give them a larger voice to explain what they do and why. I'm a very curious person and like to learn, observe, critically think, and engage. The best knowledge I receive are the ideas that I can use immediately, and I hope you find that with these episodes. I personally am a movement educator, and each student is my mirror. They teach me about how I use words and how their bodies react to certain scenarios in a playful, safe space. I like to make sure they feel grounded and ready for what life has to offer. Life can be hard, and we can never know what to expect day to day, and I like to prepare them for real life scenarios. Students show me where my level of compassion is at as I watch stories of their lives unfold with each and every movement. It is a play and a delicate dance of intuition as we work together, so they get the most out of each hour we are together. I want to extend that into these one-hour podcast episodes and have some ideas of other ways life can be beautiful and you can shine in all scenarios, living life with grace and tenderness. These episodes do take time to create, finding the right person, hoping they say yes, sorting, researching, and gathering the topics and questions I want to ask, getting it published, and then releasing it in hopes that you are inspired after a short hour's time. I hope that you share it with others and research what these leaders provide and can find hope in difficult situations, whether they be movement, daily interactions, past dilemmas, and future ones to come. In this episode, I interviewed Stacy Lyons. She is our friend who was a huge contributor to last year's season one Ohana Life podcasts. She had a great idea about us releasing a podcast in May for Stroke Awareness Month, as she had a stroke a year ago. So she talks in this one about her experience and what it was like and how she managed it, her recovery, and how she is today. I was so pleased to be able to have this candid conversation with Stacy as she walked us through what happened. She is super positive and informative, and we are extremely happy that she had such a great recovery. She was kind enough to submit all sorts of resources with us, especially a picture of the blood clot that she showed during the interview that you weren't able to see. So buckle up. It's a beautiful episode. Do check out the show notes for everything after. And she has a little update at the end. So be sure that after the podcast, you listen to her beautiful update. It's very inspiring. And we'll talk soon. Love you all.
Hi, Stacy.
Hi, Lisa.
I feel like we haven't had you on in so long.
It's been quite a while.
Ever. So I know my life has been busy, your life is busy, and we're sort of making this happen, which is great. I'm sort of closing up my season two of all of this anyway. And I think this is a great, great one to sort of wrap up in. And you had asked about this sort of being released in May for specific reasons. And we're going to talk about that today.
Yes.
So do you want to remind people, in case they haven't listened to the other ones, who you are and what you do?
Sure. So my name is Stacy. I'm the owner of Elysian Life Design. I am a spiritual consultant, astrological reader, and an energy healer. I do space clearing, land clearings, personal energy clearings. And I also do numerology, and I'm a womb reader as a personal person that both of us know, coined it, which means I can connect a mother with their child in embryo or in utero.
Which is a really, really, really cool skill. Yeah. Especially, didn't we utilize this during a labor? It was like while the woman was laboring, we sort of had
We did. Yeah.
I've utilized you a lot. So I have to say that a lot of my, I want to say success. I'm not sure if I feel super successful, but you know what I mean? I feel like my trajectory is all owed to you and what you've done for our family. So it's been a lot. So,
well, it's been both sides, Lisa, because for any of you listening that don't know, Lisa Garside created a lot of the services and stuff I offer by simply asking me, hey, do you think you could do this? And I'm like, I don't know. I'll give it a shot. So
it's great. And our families are sort of, you know, we love each other's families, which is great.
Absolutely.
So you wanted to be here today because you had had a stroke.
I did.
This was a year ago?
Yep. It was last March 24th.
So do you want to take us through that and how that felt and how you knew and just anything that you want to maybe say about it?
I would love to do that. Okay. I first want to preface saying like the fact that every stroke is different. And this is my experience with my stroke. And I am not a doctor. Lisa's not a doctor. And so I just kind of wanted to put that out there before we get started.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
and what I'd like to do, so I had my stroke on March 24th, 2021, but I'd like to take everybody back to roughly around a month before my stroke, because I feel like it's important to talk about the signs and stuff that I noticed before I had the stroke. So right around the end of February, I started having these really bad headaches, like really, really bad. And that was very unusual for me because I'm not the type of person that has headaches. I'm definitely not the type of person that has headaches that last all day long. And it was like, I would move my head or move my eyes and I would have this pressure in my head. And it went on for a couple of weeks and I saw my neurologist and I was just like, I'm having these really abnormally bad headaches. And I was going to my chiropractor twice a week. I was going to acupuncture twice a week at that point. And my neurologist was like, well, we can do a head CT and just see what's going on. So I did the head CT March 4th and everything came back clear. And then he's like, well, I can give you this migraine medicine and we can see how that goes. And I really didn't feel like it was a migraine. I just didn't feel that at all. And I know that sometimes it's not uncommon for somebody who is developing their crown chakra, all that stuff. It's not uncommon for people to have headaches when that's taking place. But this was just very abnormal for me. So I'm going to describe that. And so then I started doing cranial sacral work and I went to this company and I was going twice a week for that too. So I was doing all of the things that I thought would help and it was helping. But the thing of it was, is that it was helping temporarily. Like I would go for cranial sacral, I would go for chiropractor and everything would last like that day, but I couldn't keep it. So then I'm not really sure on the specific timing of my stroke, and I'm going to tell people why. Well, I want to backtrack even farther now, because in my own awareness, like I had been aware of what a stroke was, right? And it wasn't too long ago for people in Lisa and I's generation where Luke Perry had a stroke. But I guess I always assumed that it was something that kind of happened to older people. And so I wasn't really familiar with the signs and symptoms of a stroke. It just wasn't in my own personal awareness. And I'm not even sure if that would have helped me in my experience, because I experienced my stroke while I was sleeping. And it happened very late at night. I'm going to say it probably happened between 12 to 2 a.m. And I woke up and I had to go to the bathroom. And I woke up and I remember not being able to physically move my body because I was sleeping on my left. I was sleeping on my right side and I just couldn't move my body. I couldn't roll over my body to get up to go to the bathroom. And I was just making this moaning sound out of my mouth. And then I must have exhausted myself trying to physically roll over. And then I went back to sleep. And then I woke up two more times and the same thing happened. And so I'm not really sure on how long it lasted, what the time difference was and stuff, because I wasn't looking at my phone. And on the third time that I woke up, I was able to kind of roll off the bed. And thank goodness I was able to walk. And it was in my awareness at the time. Like I grabbed my phone, I went to the bathroom and I thought to myself, okay, I knew I needed to go to the hospital. I knew that. And I knew I couldn't drive myself. And so I spent the next hour mentally going through the process of like, I know that there is somebody that I can call and they can come pick me up and bring me to the hospital. And I could not remember who that was or their phone number. Like I could not remember to call 911 in that particular moment in time.
So you were saying 911 was the thing that you couldn't remember.
Right.
Yeah. Mm.
And so after an hour, and I was like, I was doing a Google search and I knew that something, I just knew something was off with me because I knew that I could think fine. But I knew I couldn't kind of get what I wanted across. And I couldn't even Google really what I wanted to Google at the time. I know that sounds super silly.
No, so your output, the physical right. output from the brain, just that was not connected.
Right. And so after about an hour of going through this mental process, I'm like, okay, I need to call somebody that I can call so they can call, type of a thing. So it was at 3:32 a.m. at that point that I called my mother because I'm like, who can I call this early in the morning? I'm like, I'm going to call my mom. And I remember calling her up and being like, Mom, I need you to call the people that can take me to the hospital. I didn't tell her why I needed to go. I didn't give her any details, but I knew she knew where I lived and I knew that she could call somebody and they could come get me. So the ambulance showed up and them not knowing why I was going to the emergency room. I remember them asking me certain questions and I remember only being able to provide like an okay and nodding of the head kind of responses and stuff. And looking back, I really feel like because it was two people that had never been to my house to take me to the hospital, because it's not an abnormal thing in my life experience where I've had to call an ambulance and have them take me to the hospital. But these were two people that had never been here before to pick me up. And I remember kind of thinking to myself, they probably think that I'm on something right now because I'm not really responsive, you know? And so I got to the emergency room. And there's a lot of stuff that I don't remember. And then there's a lot of stuff that I do remember. Like I don't remember them giving me a COVID test, but I know I had a COVID test done because I was admitted to the hospital. And I remember it was like time was going by so fast in this kind of moment in time in my head. And so I had no concept of time. But I remember that they did blood work and they had admitted me for a previous condition that I was having a flare of at the time. And I needed a blood transfusion, so they were giving me that. And then I remember the next thing I remember is that they sent me up to the cardiac unit, which is usually where they put me. And then I met with a doctor that is not uncommon for me to meet with when I'm in the hospital. And it was a GI doctor. But I was still very blurry at that point. And I remember at that particular time, they had a person come in the room and they were giving me like an exam where I had to put my hands out. I had to put my mask down. I had to smile. I had to squeeze their hand. I had to tell them, like, they hold up flashcards or like, you know, what is this? A banana, a monkey, a balloon, like very simple things. And it was like cognitive skills, right? And so then 2 days later now, and this entire time that I'm in the hospital for the first 2 days and stuff, I wasn't watching TV. I wasn't doing anything. I was just kind of like still in my bed, just kind of like in my own little space and just kind of being with myself and kind of non-existent to the rest of the world. That's really how it felt. And so then 2 days after the fact, I remember seeing my neurologist walk in the door. And it is very, very, very uncommon. In the times that I've been admitted to the hospital, I can only think of two other times, maybe one other time, where the doctors that I have outside of the hospital that were working in the hospital at the time I was there. So I remember my neurologist walking in the door and I was very excited to see him for some reason. I was just so excited to see him. I remember him coming over to the bed and he did the same kind of test that the woman had done before, like squeeze my hands and stuff. And let me see put your mask down. Let me see you smile. And then he said to the nurse, he said, I want to order a head CT again. And then something called a transesophageal echocardiograph. And then the next thing I remember, I think it was the same day, then my gastroenterologist walked in the door. And after the fact, well, I'll get into after the fact, but so then the same day, I remember going down in the room to do the transesophageal echocardiogram. And I was completely kind of, I'm not going to say out of my mind, but I was just kind of in this really, I was in a newborn baby stage. That's what I'm calling it, a newborn baby stage. And I remember them sticking a tube down my throat. So anybody who's not familiar with a transesophageal echocardiograph, they essentially stick a tube down your throat to kind of look at your heart. And I remember the doctor being like, wow, there it is. And I'm going to show Lisa the picture. And unfortunately, I don't think nobody else will be able to see it. But
oh God,
that right there, Lisa, was the blood clot that I'd had in my heart.
Oh my God, Cece.
And so what had happened was a piece of that had broken off and gone to my brain. And I had experienced a ischemic stroke is what they called it on the left-hand side of my brain. And so I remember him saying like, oh my God, there it is kind of a thing, because I don't think they, because of my age and stuff, I don't really know if they just dismissed the fact that I could have a stroke because I was 38 when I had the stroke. And so then after that, I remember them transferring me to the stroke unit. And then I started, like, it's really bizarre because I can remember the first thing that I watched when I was in the hospital, like random things that I can remember from that hospital stay, but I really, it's all kind of like very blurry at this point. And not just because a year has passed, it was because I was in this mental, I think that the brain is a fascinating organ. It really, really, really is. And the brain can find new pathways to rewire the brain to get something done that it used to be able to do, but it can't do.
That's the beauty of the brain. Yeah.
So I really feel like looking back, I really feel like my brain was beginning that process from the moment that I'd had the stroke. And I've always been the type of person that I'm like, if God brings me to a situation, God will see me through it. So it's bizarre too, because I knew I was safe and protected. I knew I'd be okay, but I couldn't see the long-term picture of like when I would be okay. I just knew that I'd be okay. And at that particular point, while I was in the hospital, I would say really only my parents knew, and a few kind of key people knew at that particular moment in time, because I remember that I had been working with an ancestral healer for something. And I don't really remember if I had texted her or she had reached out to me, but something happened. And I remember she set up a kind of a prayer for me while I was in the hospital. And my accountant knew, because it was tax season. And so that was really kind of all the people that knew at the time that it had the stroke. And then after the stroke, so I was in the hospital for 9 days. And after I left the stroke, after I left the hospital, I remember kind of thinking to myself, they're just going to let me go home now, right? By myself. And I'm going to be on my own. Okay, I can do this, kind of a thing. And I remember from the moment I left the hospital, even in the hospital, I was still in this state where I was really only responding in a very simple manner. So when somebody would ask me, like, you know, do you need anything? Are you okay? Type of thing. I'd be like, yeah, I'm fine. Certain stuff like that. But going back to how fascinating the brain is for a second too, I want to say that I'm grateful that I was at least in cognitive awareness, that like, I remember the nurse coming in, I think this was my fourth day. And she's like, I've got some medicine for you to take. And I remember asking her, what medication are you giving me? And she's like, this one is your warfarin, which I had been on when I had had the stroke too, which was really bizarre and stuff. I just wasn't therapeutic on it. And she's like, this one is your prednisone. And then this one is your Lipitor. And I'm like, why are you guys giving me Lipitor? And she's like, well, it is a very common medication that we would give to somebody who has a who had a stroke. And I said, well, I'm not going on Lipitor. And she's like, well, I'll make a note and you can discuss that with your doctor and stuff. So I was at least in cognitive awareness that I could decide what I was putting in my body and stuff like that too. And the reason why I didn't want to go on Lipitor is because I knew the stroke wasn't caused by typical stroke kind of things. I knew I didn't have like a blocked artery. Yeah. I knew, you know, I quit smoking 10 years at that point. I had quit smoking. And so I knew it wasn't due to the high cholesterol, any of that type of typical stuff that one could attribute with a stroke. So I'd come home, and the first thing that I did when I got home was I took a very nice shower, which is the first thing I do anytime I come home from the hospital. I took a very nice shower, and then I went to bed, and I pretty much stayed in bed for like the first week I was home. And again, no TV, no nothing. And I did look up after I'd had the stroke. I did look up kind of like the processes of the brain. And I remember it was so fascinating because I felt like spirit was really leading me to all of the things that I had to do to recover. I just wasn't aware of it at the time, because my knowledge of it is they say anybody who's got like a brain injury, right, it is important to sleep, because that's how the brain heals. And it was also important to not engage the brain too much at first, like keep it very simple.
Yeah. No extra stimulation.
And And so the second week now that I'm home from the hospital, so this is like mid-April, then I started to watch some television and watch some movies while I'm laying in bed. And then after the second week that I got home, that's when I started to kind of like, I knew I needed to come up with a game plan. I just wasn't sure what that game plan was for me, because I started to look up diets that can help with strokes. I started to look up sound frequencies that can help.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this kind of alternative methods, right? And on the second day I was home from the hospital, I do remember having a telehealth appointment with both my gastroenterologist and my neurologist at the time. And I remember saying to my neurologist, like, can I drive? You know, can I drive? And I remember him saying, he's like, that is going to have to be a personal decision that you're going to have to make whenever you feel like you're ready to drive. He's like, if you feel like you're ready to get in behind the car, behind the wheel, then go for it, type of a thing. He's like, but there's no kind of set timing on when you can do something like that. And my telehealth appointment with my gastroenterologist, I really remember what I got from that, as I remember thanking him for saving my life. And I remember thanking my neurologist too for saving my life. And my neurologist had told me, in the event that this happens again, there are methods that we have that can, because he told me that they have this machine, I guess, that goes in and essentially sucks the clot out of the brain. And so it basically, essentially, you kind of recover immediately when they do that. But at that point, it had been 2 days since I'd had my stroke. So they couldn't go in there and do that. But he's like, God forbid this happens again. You know, at least it's marked in your chart and stuff, and people will know to look for that right away now, kind of a thing. And I remember my gastroenterologist having this conversation with me. And he's like, you don't really remember the hospital, do you? And I'm like, no, I don't. I really don't. And he's like, that's not uncommon. And then it's like bits and pieces. Cause I remember probably my third week, maybe two and a half, no, the third week after the stroke, I remember having another telehealth appointment with my primary care doctor. And at that point I was waiting to get in with the rehabilitation center. So my neurologist was sending me for occupational therapy, speech therapy, and physical therapy. Because even though I could walk after my stroke, I wasn't at my full capacity with being able to walk. So in 2016, I had a series of events that this vascular condition that I have, it kind of occluded some arteries in my legs. And so I had to go to physical therapy to relearn to walk at that point too. So I had kind of diminished the progress that I had made between 2016 to 2021. And so I was just kind of struggling with that. And I remember my primary care doctor telling me, like, do things, simple things, like touch your fingers to each other, try to get a ball and squeeze your hands. Like, he's like, however you can utilize your hands now, that's your best benefit to do. Because I was having an issue so the stroke happened on the left side of the brain and it affected the right side of my body. So, and I'm right-handed. So I was having trouble writing, and I was kind of unaware at the time because it was so minor, but I apparently did have a droop in my face too. right after the stroke. So my primary care doctor was like, you know, however you can utilize your hands now, that's important before you get into physical therapy and occupational therapy and stuff. And so now this is probably a month after my stroke. And I did find, I didn't really like the Mediterranean diet again, because it was more geared towards to lowering cholesterol and stuff. And I knew that wasn't my problem. And so I kind of opted out for that and just kind of went for an overall heart healthy kind of dietary program. And then I did find some very amazing sound frequencies. I did brain regeneration, and I'm happy to provide you, Lisa, with the links of the sound frequencies that I used. And I essentially just created this YouTube playlist and would just play it at night.
That's awesome. Yeah. I play frequencies at night. I would love to include this for people.
Yeah.
To play, because you sleep better too.
Right. Absolutely. And they were surprised, because they weren't really like specific stroke recovery sound frequencies, because I had looked and there were quite a few of it, but it was like 12 minutes, 11 minutes. Stuff. And I was like, I need something that's going to last kind of all night long. Mm-hmm. And so the ones I found them to be very, very helpful. And so about a month after, that's when I got into the physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy programs. And it took me a solid month after being in speech therapy to be able to communicate to the speech therapist that I was feeling really slow. I remember those are the words that came out. I'm like, I feel very slow. And I had the hardest time communicating that. And she's like, what do you mean slow? Because so 3 weeks after I'd been home, I did go to the Stop and Shop down the street. It was like 2 minutes down the street. And I remember getting in my car and I felt so accomplished. You know, I was probably going 10 miles an hour, but that was the comfortability that I was comfortable driving at. But I did it, you know, so, but I was like, I just feel really slow in everything that I do. I feel slow in walking. I feel slow in pulling my debit card out of my wallet. I feel slow when I'm engaging with people like the cashier and stuff, you know, I just feel slow.
Well, again, it's a break in the circuitry that feeds to the periphery of your physical body. So your brain may have started repairing, but it wasn't reconnecting to your output, you know, the motor output, which is what they started working with in OT and speech therapy, I'm assuming. Yeah.
And she's like, that's really completely normal. And so I felt better knowing that that was normal and knew that that would kind of come back eventually. Right. Again, I just didn't know when or how it would come back. And at that point, it was a little bit hard for me because I'm in it, right? I'm really in it at that point. And it was hard for me to see what it was going to look like once I was out of that situation. Mm-hmm. And it was really fascinating. I learned so much from speech therapy and occupational therapy. Like essentially, I didn't need to relearn how to talk. Like I was verbal. But I had a hard time putting my thoughts together and then saying the words that I thought I was saying together. And I remember her walking me through this process of like, I don't remember what it's called at this point in time, but it's essentially when people talk and they raise their voice at certain markers in the sentence to like emphasize
inflection.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't think I do that, Haley. Like, I don't remember ever doing that in my life. But now that I'm out of it, I can see when people do that to me, and I can see when I do it to people too. So I'm like, it's totally a thing. But at the time, I'm like, I really don't think I ever did that before. And she would hold up cue cards, right? And I'd have to come up with words that began with a certain letter. And at first it was just like, you know, W, okay, walk, worm, wiggle, you know, certain simple, whatever I could come up with at the time. And then it would have to be in a certain category. So then I would advance over time. And then she started having me work through mazes and stuff too on the piece of paper. And I'd have homework that I would have to do. And over the course, I'm going to say for about 5 months, I had to essentially be in complete silence whenever I was texting somebody or responding back to somebody or typing an email. I had to have complete silence in my home. I had to turn my radio off. I had to turn the TV off. I had just had to have silence. And it took me forever to respond with a simple text message back to somebody. But again, it was my brain kind of rewiring itself and relearning how to function. That's why I call it like this infancy brain, you know, because essentially too, I mean, it was kind of similar to a traumatic brain event, you know? And so I really had to take the time that I needed to kind of heal myself. And that was really important for me because I really, even at 5 months out, I really, at that point, hadn't told, well, that's not true. I think I told people in May that I'd had a stroke because May is Stroke Awareness Month. And it was the end of May. And that's when I went on Facebook and stuff and told people that I had this stroke. And essentially, I kind of loved the response that I got from that because a lot of people that I did tell that I'd had a stroke, they all told me, one of the first things that people told me was, I knew somebody who had a stroke and they had a full recovery. I knew somebody who had a stroke and they had a full recovery. I had met this woman and she had had a stroke when she was in her, I think she was 19 or 20, but she had had a stroke in her back. And that was the first time that I was aware that strokes can happen other places in the body besides just the brain. And she had also had a full recovery, but she had to relearn how to walk too, because it was affecting her spine. And I loved that people, and I don't know if I knew these people when they had their strokes too, but I people responded back to me like, I had a stroke too, and I've had a full recovery, or I've had a stroke and I'm still working through my recovery too. But I loved the fact that it kind of opened up this broader conversation to bring to awareness the fact that people can really have strokes at any age. They really, really can. I mean, I've read articles since then about people who have had strokes. Just the other day, I was reading this wonderful article about a little boy who had had a stroke when he was 11. And then Haley Baldwin just recently released, you know, she had gone to the hospital and stuff and she had a mini stroke. And strokes can happen. They happen in both men and women. They happen in all different races. It's not discriminating against anybody when you talk about a stroke. And
it reminds me of miscarriages. Like, you don't know how many people have had a miscarriage until you put that out there. And then all that support comes from, I mean, in that case, it's women, but all that support comes out there of, you know, we stand by you and it was tough, but where I had another child, or I, you know, honor the miscarriage in this way. And it really is helpful.
Yeah. And I think that the reason that I didn't really want to share with people that I had a stroke is because I didn't really want people to treat me any differently or to kind of like be hovering on me either, you know? And I get that there is certain times in spaces that you want people, like you need that type of hovering support, right? You do, you need that. And I'm very, very lucky that I have some great neighbors in my community that, you know, reached out to me and was like, what do you need essentially? You know, what do you need? And I remember, you know, some people brought me food. Some people picked up my mail for me. I put laundry outside on my front porch and they did my laundry. They brought it back. I mean, very helpful stuff, right?
That's amazing.
That a lot of people don't think of and stuff. And one neighbor came and walked with me, you know, as part of my rehabilitation, but I didn't really want people to view me differently because at that particular moment in time too, I didn't feel like I was at the place where I wanted to be. Kind of this normal place, right? But what is normal? What is normal? And we're all in the new normal anyways.
Right.
I remember a couple of weeks after I'd had the stroke, I remember my mom and stepdad came down to visit me and stuff. And they left and they said after the fact, they're like, because it took me a while to be able to articulate what was really going on. And they were like, we would have never, ever known that that was happening because you hit it well. And I wasn't trying to hide it, but it was just my process of it, right? Mm-hmm. And it took me so long to just be able to articulate, this is what's happening, you know? And I still have, I remember gauging my process with my occupational therapy and stuff using chopsticks because I really love sushi. And I remember after I had to use my hands because I couldn't use the chopsticks. And so till this day, I still gauge my process with that, with using chopsticks because I'm still very much working through some of the recovery process, even though my neurologist had told me he said that the most healing takes place within the first year. And I have hit the year mark now. And he said, healing can certainly take place after that first year mark. But he said, it's just a little bit slower to progress. And then he said, sometimes it's not uncommon that you notice things after the fact, like you go to try to do something that you used to be able to do and now you can't do it type of a thing. So now a year after the fact, I still have an issue with my right hand and I still do have a hard time writing. And I try not to, because sometimes when I'm frustrated with my writing abilities, I try different pens, I try different writing utensils, stuff like that. And I usually kind of give up and just go to the microphone dictionary thing on the laptop that types it out for me or types it on my phone type of stuff. I really try hard not to do that because I want to utilize my hands as much as I can to improve my writing abilities. And I still have a hard time like opening up food containers. And I still sometimes have a hard time chewing my food and not having food fall out all over the place. And I know that that is something that again, a normal person can experience too. But for me, I just notice it more. And I notice sometimes too, that sometimes I have to pause, take a breath. And sometimes I will lose my train of thought, which certainly happened before the stroke too, but I'm just more hyperly aware of it now. And even things like things you wouldn't really think of, meaning like when somebody like comes at me, right, and wants to know an answer right away, I have a very hard time wrapping my head around it and processing the information that they've given me and then processing internally what I'm speaking out to them. And it's all happening on the inside of my brain. And I feel like it's happening very, very fast. But for me, sometimes I feel like I'm taking forever to answer them, or I'm not answering them the way that I want to answer them. So I'm still kind of working through some of those bits and pieces too.
How nice though to, you know, talk us through going back to being conscious, being conscious of what we're saying, how we're saying it versus just continuously talking or not listening. Like, you're really having to use your brain so much more than probably we are even doing, because our pathways are already rutted and rooted down, and you're creating these new pathways. You know, this is basically essentially what I teach for the physical body. I try to work it opposite, where we might engage a muscle and have that feedback to the brain to say, okay, here's the area, here's where it is, here's what it can do. And it goes that way. You're starting from the beginning, brain down, and having it go to the periphery from the way that they're tackling this. From a fellow traumatic brain injury person as well, you know, mine all happened when I was a kid. Retraining is a huge piece. I think that's why I do what I do. I mean, I got into it a different way, having something happen to my son, but I had to relearn things. But I didn't have speech therapists or OT or any of that. Like, it was just, I just had to figure it out, but I don't even know if I created pathways that work or not, you know? But like, you were figuring it out, and then they had a plan for you, which is fantastic, because those, that week that you were home, 2 weeks that you were home after it had happened, seems like those, you were really trying to say, okay, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? Especially that second week. Okay. So I have a question about the original, the 2 days that you were in the hospital. Well, you were in there for longer, but those are really important 2 days before they knew it had happened. Is there something that, like, a major sign that people can look out for to be able to help tell someone around them or a doctor? Or is there something that could have been done sooner than the 2 days? Because they could they have sucked it out then?
They could have. Yeah.
Okay.
To my knowledge, they really, I mean, the few key things I knew about a stroke, right? It was like speech, balance, and time is of the essence. Like, the faster that you can get to the hospital, the faster that you can get appropriate medical care for a stroke, that makes all the difference. So essentially, in order to use the device that they have that can suck out the clot, they really want to do that ideally within the first couple of hours. But I think it typically is the first 24 hours that they like to do that in.
But isn't the damage already done?
Yes, at that particular moment in time.
So what are they taking it out for?
But I guess if a clot is removed fast enough, like if somebody knew that they had a stroke, right? And they call the ambulance, or like if I had been with somebody out in public, right, that knew the signs of a stroke, they could have called the ambulance, said, hey, I'm at the grocery store, this girl's having a stroke, type of a thing. Then in the ambulance, there are stuff that they can start in the ambulance too. Then they would have gone to the hospital, sucked it out. I probably would have, my recovery time would have been a lot less, type of a thing. But that's a very good question, Lisa. And I don't know if I have the appropriate answer for you, because I think that looking back at it, I think that a telltale sign would have been the confusion. But again, I wasn't really articulating the fact that I was having confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like they were speaking to me, and it reminded me very much so of like the Charlie Brown with like the teacher, like wah, 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 you know? And so I don't really know in certain situations if somebody's going to be able to even tell, you know. I would like to think that, like, doing things like essentially what they did, like having somebody come in and make me squeeze their hands and stuff, even though I was able to squeeze it, I was kind of forcing myself to squeeze very, very hard because I'm a Capricorn and I like to be, you know, the winner, so to speak. And, but I would think to maybe look for certain signs, like just this pure state of confusion, or maybe asking somebody, can you repeat back to me what I just told you? You know, do you understand what I just said? I think that that may have been helpful.
Isn't there things too, or maybe this is a heart attack, you can't stick your tongue out? I think I'm good. Do you have good articles that we can include in the show notes that people could read about?
I can certainly okay. Look some up. Yeah. And send some helpful information too, because I know that there's like this whole acronym, like be fast, and it's like balance something. I don't remember the whole thing, but it is important to know. Okay. Like signs and symptoms, if you happen to be around somebody that's having a stroke, or also signs and symptoms of if you are having a stroke, and if you're cognitively aware that you're having a stroke too, and the steps to take at that point. Because
you had a blood clot in your heart, mm-hmm. that dislodged or broke, a piece broke off and went into your brain.
Yep. Hmm.
Crazy.
And so that's why I really am so grateful, Lisa, that you have provided me this opportunity on your platform to tell people about strokes and stuff, because it's kind of like, you know what it feels like? It's kind of like when somebody buys a new car and they buy a color that they never see. And then they buy a new car in a new color that they've never owned a color car before. And then they start seeing that color everywhere. And since my stroke, I always find articles about young adults and stuff who have had strokes. And certainly there are people that have experienced, I mean, everybody experiences a stroke in a different manner. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some people that have to really, really, really relearn how to walk, like physically move their limbs and stuff again, and retrain the brain to physically move their arm or move their leg or do pretty serious stuff. And there are unfortunately very bad side effects of a stroke too. Like somebody can easily die from a stroke. And I think that I had a couple of good things working in my favor. I think one of it was my age. And I think one of it was my awareness of alternative therapies to do in conjunction with the Western medical therapies.
Yes.
That really helped. And I'm incredibly grateful, you know, because I continued with the chiropractic care. I continued with the cranial sacral care. I continued with acupuncture. All twice a week. I was going to physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy 3 times a week. And so it was essentially like making sure my recovery was my job at that point.
Yes.
You know,
which is what happens when any illness comes, right? People make it their full-time job to get better.
Yeah. So I'm very, 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 very grateful to you, Lisa, and for anybody who listens to this. And I do still have, I do kind of, I'm not quite sure how to articulate this. And I have learned how to now say when I need a minute, right? I'm like, give me a second so I can figure out how I want to articulate this. And that was one of the things I learned from speech therapy too, that I still very much utilize. And then also kind of key signals of like, when to ask for help from, so like when you're searching for a word, like I personally wish that Wordle was around this time last year, because Wordle would have been very helpful for me in my speech therapy.
I just learned about Wordle and my kids do it. And yeah. I think it is the most fascinating, best kept secret, because how can one word that goes out into the entire world be kept secret until someone, you know, resolves it. And even then people don't share what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. No one ever cheats. No one. That's a really good secret.
Yeah. And it's like, they don't give, it's not like a crossword puzzle where they give you like a hint.
Yeah.
And it's just like this random five-letter word that could be anything.
Anything. So for anyone who doesn't know what Wordle is, let's just put that out there. I think you go to wordle.com or just type in Wordle and then it's at the New York Times. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you click on that and you have like five tries to get a five-letter word, and it tells you, so you start by just typing any five-letter word. And then it tells you if any of those letters are in it and if they're in the right order. And you just keep going and you either get it or you don't. And it's really such a cool thing that no one cheats. I mean, no one ever says like, well, it begins with a W, or I mean, no one. And to me, that is just so fascinating, because in a world where we can get information like as fast as we want, that is something that is not shared very quickly. So I do appreciate the individuality of that for people. But I'm grateful for you for sharing this for us so that we know more information, especially from your personal perspective. And, you know, you do have spirit on your side, which is extremely helpful. And I'm sure at some points it probably felt like you were communing with them and weren't able to, you know, utilize the physical body to go beyond that. Would that happen sometimes?
Yes and no. I mean, there was a certain period. So in the first kind of month that I was home, that was actually one of my fears, that I would lose the ability to communicate with spirit. And even though I was communicating with them through the whole thing, I was worried that like it was just going to suddenly disappear. And the light bulb that had gone on 12 years ago would suddenly shut off, kind of a thing. And I'm very grateful too that, so the side of the brain that the stroke happened on, it controls more of the motor functions.
Yes.
It controls the financial pieces and stuff, like abilities to manage numbers, to calculate stuff like that. And I thankfully did not lose my ability to do math or anything like that. And so I'm very, very, very lucky in the overall scheme of this. And one of the things that I have noticed a year out of the stroke too, is that there are really fascinating ways that my brain has rewired my brain. So like beforehand, I couldn't really remember like something that me and you had talked about like 3 years ago, something that I had said to you, right? I wasn't able to retain that information. But now I feel like my brain absorbs it and then puts it in a file and then puts the file in a certain place. And then when I'm talking to that person, the file comes out and it calculates the information. I'm able to retain the memories of it temporarily, at least, and recall certain stuff that I've talked about with a certain person. So I think my internal filing system is better. And I still notice sometimes too, where I get very excited and I kind of fumble my words. And which I think is kind of normal too, and the normalcy of that. And I also want to say too, that after I had my stroke, my headaches went away. It's like they magically disappeared immediately. And I brought that up to my neurologist too. And I don't really know if that's a thing that like a standard doctor will tell you, like, okay, headaches. I mean, I know that headaches are a pre-symptom of a stroke, but to have them just disappear immediately after my stroke, I think that that's not a coincidence. Mm-hmm. And certainly now when I do get headaches and stuff, there's a little part of me that gets a little nervous every time I have a headache, but I try not to dwell in that, because headaches can happen for many different reasons.
Many
different reasons. Yeah. So if somebody is listening to this and they're like, oh my God, I've had a headache for 2 weeks, could it be a stroke? I mean, maybe, but probably not too at the same time, you know?
And pain is complicated, because now that that's happened to you, you have a pathway that equates headache may equal stroke. And so that has to be rerouted somehow, or otherwise it just feels like more intense pain.
Right.
And so for you, it could be more of that than anything. I mean, I love the talk of the little filing cabinet in your head or the folder of each person. No, really, because wouldn't it be so cool if we could teach kids that from the get-go? And yeah. So they'd be more, because, you know, nowadays they've done scientific studies that there's more kids with ADHD. I think they call it ADHD now. They used to call it ADD when we were kids. Mm-hmm. But I follow a neurobiologist who studies the brain and the eyes. And, you know, he talks about when you're a child, you have more clusters of pathways in your brain. And over time we prune those, you know, based on what we need and experiences that we have, because you don't want as many as you have as a child. And then after 25, we can't really create too many new ones, but we can strengthen existing ones. So take something that might be a dirt road and make it a paved road, and then make it a highway, right? And so make it just much bigger. So it's really cool to hear your process through all of that, more pruning and more redirecting of neural pathways. So yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And there are definitely some times too, where I still get very confused. Mm-hmm. And
but we all do.
We all do.
We're all so busy that it can happen.
It's not something very uncommon, you know, where we're not paying attention to what somebody is saying and stuff. So I it has taught me definitely to be more mindful in my presence. Mm-hmm. And really, like, when I'm talking to Lisa Garside, I'm talking to Lisa Garside. I'm not doing anything else, like off anywhere else, you know, kind of a thing. So it has definitely taught me to be more patient with myself too, for sure.
Yeah.
And I've definitely learned some great techniques and stuff that I wasn't even aware of that I was capable of doing. Like with occupational therapy, one of the things I learned as I progressed in occupational therapy was to repeat numbers backwards. Like he would give me a series of numbers, I'd have to repeat them backwards. And then
that's just good brain work for anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody. I mean, I do brain work, more hand eye, you know, but brain work needs to be done every day.
Yeah.
Cause you do, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah. And then I had to do pen pushups. I don't know if you know what those are.
I don't think so. Well, maybe I do if you describe it.
It's essentially where, because apparently after my stroke, my eyes would kind of, it would reach a certain point and my eye would kind of turn out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking I'm explaining this right.
Oh, yeah. So you're talking about these.
Yeah. So I'd have to do these pen pushups where I focus on the tip of the pen and then go forward. And then as soon as I feel my eye distract, I'd have to start again. So you go up and down and that's how you do pen pushups.
Yeah. So we call them eye pushups. Mm. So your eye is following the tip of the pen in and out. Yeah. I work with people with that too. We just use the tip of our thumb and we might balance and do that at the same time. Cause it benefits everyone. It's not beneficial. It's right. Never going to harm. It's always going to do something better than what it did before. But I think what's important for people to know is that you had some health issues starting in 2016. And you had a really good team of doctors on your side to begin with.
Yes. Well, I did have some health issues stemming back to before 2016, in 2021 too, but I had a solid team in place by 2016.
Yeah, that's great.
And now I'm also very grateful that now I have my own home INR machine for anybody who wants to be fancy. So an INR is essentially a blood test that they do that measures your coagulability. I think I'm pronouncing that properly.
Yeah, coagulability.
But it's essentially, it's your clot factor.
Mm.
So for me, I want to be between 2.5 and 3.5. And at the time that I had the stroke, I was on blood thinner. I just was not therapeutic in my blood thinners. And I don't know.
What does that mean?
It means I wasn't in range. So I wasn't between 2.5. I wasn't between 2 and 3 at the time. Cause that was my range at the time, was 2.0 to 3.0. And I wasn't within the range. I was like 1.6 kind of a thing. But
so doesn't that mean that your blood is thinner Or that means it's thicker.
It means it's thicker.
At the one range.
Yeah. So it means that I could clot very easily. Okay. Because back in 2016, I had an issue with clotting. And so that's why I'd been on Coumadin at the time. And so now my INR, I have a higher therapeutic range that I have to stick within. And I don't know if it was the fact that maybe because I had gone to bed early that night, I don't remember if I took my medicine that night. I just don't really know. And I don't really remember. And I've been wrapping my head around the fact that like a clot that size, it wouldn't form in one night, I would think.
Right. I mean, that was so evident in that picture. I mean, I'm not even a doctor. And I was like, that's wrong. There's something there that's dangerous. So interesting. Well, this is great. I hope someone gets something out of it. I can even put your contact information there if someone wants to reach out to you. But it's been really great talking about all of this and just getting a better understanding and just getting to talk to you.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Lisa. I'm so grateful.
Thanks, Stacy.
Hi, everybody. It's Stacy. I just really want to thank you all for listening to this episode. And I have some very exciting news that I'd like to share with all of you. So after Lisa and I recorded this episode, I went for an updated ultrasound of my heart. I had been in September and December of last year, and it still showed that the blood clot was there, although it was flat and it was resting on some scar tissue inside of my heart. And this time when I went, I'm happy to say that after a year, the blood clot has fully dissolved. And I am just so excited that I get to share that news with you. And recently, I was talking to a friend of mine, and she told me about an experience that she had in March of this year. She said that she woke up in the middle of the night, and she couldn't feel one side of her body. And she also said that she couldn't get any words out of her mouth to tell her husband to call 911. And then finally the words came out, and she waited about an hour, and she said that her symptoms had gone away. So the next day, she followed up with a healthcare professional, and she was told that she had experienced what's known as a mini stroke. So I encourage you all to know the signs of a stroke and about stroke prevention, if not to help save your life, then possibly a loved one's life.
Thank you so much for listening. I wanted to update you all on the studio. As of right now, when this podcast comes out, we will no longer be at the physical location of 44 Cedar Street. Please check out our website at ohanayoganh.com, as we will still be doing events. We will still be doing classes through Zoom, and we will keep you posted on our new location. This one will be very big, so be prepared for what's to come in the future, and I hope you all have the best day.